I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
This program is made possible thanks to the generosity of our listeners. Show your support at heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
Hello, welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Aaron Bresnitz. We are recording this opening on Thursday, and this is running on a Sunday. Hopefully we'll have a better idea of where we stand with the election by then. We hope that everyone's staying safe and staying sane, checking in with yourself, checking in with friends, making sure to not be constantly refreshing the news, which is more of a suggestion for myself. But we'll get through this. We're in it together, and the fight continues. We are super excited to be running a very special episode of Snacky Tunes. We were invited to be part of the World City Global Digital Conference, which was a very cool online summit that we participated in. We brought in two of our favorite restaurants, Lhasa from LA and Empress Market from London, to talk about food, music, their participation in our new book out on Faden right now. And it was just a really cool conversation. So we hope that you enjoy it. Then we go into the archives from a performance from March of 2017, from a performance by Kidwave, a group in Sweden, now lives in LA. And it's very, very fun, inspirational, sort of the break that we need to get through the rest of this weekend. And again, if you haven't had a chance to pick up a copy of our book, please head over to faden.com or any one of your local independent bookshops. Order a copy. They make great holiday gifts. If you haven't thought about that yet, we're here to give you that suggestion. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy Snacky Tunes here on HRN.
We talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes. We'll be right back.
Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Darren Bresnitz.
I'm the other half your host, Greg Bresnitz, and welcome to World City.
Yeah, we are so excited to be making this stop on our virtual book tour in support of our first book debut, first drop, Snacky Tunes. Music is the main ingredient, chefs and their music. And we are so excited to be partnering with Faden on this. It is a dream come true. We are absolutely honored to be joined by two of the chefs in the book. We have Nomra Siddiqui all the way from London, chef owner of Empress Market. Nomra, hello.
Hiya, nice to be part of this project.
Yes, thank you. And yeah. Chad Valencia, shout out LA, hometown, chef owner of Lhasa. Welcome to Snacky Tunes. Welcome back to Snacky Tunes.
Right on. Thanks for having me back. Very excited to be a part of this.
Yes. And, you know, we are so excited that you are both part of this book, which for those who don't know, we interviewed 86 chefs and restaurateurs from all over the world about their relationship with food and music, how it inspired them their entire life, influenced their creative process, how it relates to what they cook. And you both, Chad, along with your brother, Chase, showed up in a really great way. And we wanted to sit down and talk to you about why you love music, food, and how it's influenced your life. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
So our main focus of today is around chefs and their playlists, both how they inspire you, how they push you forward, how you use them in your restaurants, how you use it to design dishes, and how you use it within the creative process. I would like to start with both of you. In the book, every recipe is paired with a song. So both of you paired a song with a dish. Chad, you paired Felt Tip by Teebs with your rhubarb singang with slow roasted octopus and braised daikon. And Nomra, you did a smoked aubergine in onion and tomato masala that was paired with ruby by Ali Fartouri and Toumani. Fartouri and Toumani Dekebi? Did I get that right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I apologize on pronunciation. What was interesting about both of you, neither of which that saw your submissions, is that both the song and the dish evoked the same feeling. For you, Chad, it had to deal with the ocean. And for you, Nomra, it had to just do with a sense of freedom and a sense of feeling and sense of home. What is it about these elements from these different things that are able to inspire the same emotions from two different creative outputs?
Oh, man. I feel like it's kind of hard. I feel like at first it was... You know, you don't want to get too cerebral about it. You just really want to make a connection that kind of fits. And I think Teebs' music just hits very close to home. He's actually one of my best friends. So his music in general is kind of the tempo and the vibe that I like to cook to. And then it is definitely on the more emotional side of things. So this dish is definitely an homage to a very traditional Filipino dish that is one of my favorites. So it kind of just makes sense there. And then the second part is because it was a seafood version of this dish and there are these textural sounds in the song that are kind of misty and kind of sounds like water washing over in and out. It just made sense. There was a connection and yeah, and I played it for my brother, and he was like, that's perfect. And just, it clicked. Mm. It clicked.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, with my recipe, it's a sort of dish that has been, I mean, like just today, actually, I was speaking to my grandmother on FaceTime, and I was like, oh, you know, your recipe for Bengan Kapurta, which is like the smoked aubergine dish, is like, you know, I got that published. And she's like, oh, that's one of our homey dishes. Why did you share that one? But I'm like, that's what it is. It's like such a nostalgic sort of food where it's just like you make that every day and it kind of almost is made through instinct. And I feel like Ruby kind of has that same sort of feeling. I mean, it's not a Pakistani song or anything. It's, you know, but it's a very, I don't know, it has a sort of like, sort of natural instinct kind of falling through. And I mean, I kind of describe, like, I think the smokiness when you're charring the aubergines and the sort of like that, the smell that comes from doing that kind of definitely gives you that sense of being outdoors. And even when you're eating it, it's just like, you could have made it in your kitchen with one burner, but you suddenly kind of transported somewhere else. So that's really important for me. But at the same time, it's so incredibly familiar as well. So I think, yeah, that's how it brought those two together.
You know, I speaking to both of you during the interview process, I found that music was a lifelong connection to you from childhood, which was also paired with food, but it did seem that music was really the first love. Can you talk about music's influence on you in your childhood and how you've carried that through into adulthood?
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, I kind of talk about the way the food and music has kind of always been happening around me almost. And that's how I've learned to cook. And even with music, like, it's just, you know, I talked about it in my interview as well, where, like, you know, I'd have Eagles and Bollywood music and then pop playing. And it's kind of like created that sort of mashup of styles and aesthetics. And you kind of understand where different places are coming from. And even the sights and smells of food, like the smell of the onions and the sizzling, and like, my, you know, rushing home from, like, you know, from school, and my mum's like, she's brought us in and we're quickly putting things together. All those things are kind of coming together. And I always kind of describe it, you don't know where one thing begins and one ends. So I think, yeah, like, I have dreams about certain songs, and I'll wake up and I'm like, oh God, like, I know where that was. And
what is one of the songs? Is that a curiosity?
Well, I mean, one of the songs I talk about, it, I mean, New Kid in Town is very much waking in and out of, like, sleep. And then today, I actually had this week where I was trying to, there's an old Bollywood song by Kishore Kumar being like, Tere Bina. And it's the idea of, like, I mean, roughly translating the lyrics, it's like, life without you is okay, but life not with you is would seem impossible. And I just felt like having that weird Bollywood moment. I'm like, I feel that way about so many things where I'm like, life's okay without my career or certain things. But I think a lot of Bollywood certainly plays out in my head, like 80s Bollywood in my sleep. So, yeah.
And Chad, what about you and your brother and music and growing up? What does that mean to you?
It means a lot, to be honest. I've actually, for whatever personal reasons, took a long time in my career to even allow people to know that Chef Chad was a Stone's Throw Leaving Records recording artist, you know? I think mainly it was just like, if we're talking about the restaurant, I really just want to talk about the restaurant. And if we're talking about the music, I just want to talk about the music. And, you know, I think they're just very, obviously they're coming from the same person. So there's a lot of vulnerability there, I guess. But it's so deep. We grew up in a family full of, like, young Filipino DJs that DJed all the neighborhood parties, you know what I mean? And that was just always part of it. And before that, like, everybody on my dad's side grew up playing guitar, piano, and singing. And then my grandmother, too. So it's just always been a part of it. And then owning a restaurant and creating a vibe, let's be real, you know, your playlist is half of that.
Yeah.
And so it was just, there's a lot of connections to it, to be honest. And then just being in the kitchen on an everyday basis, you share this space with a group of people for a certain amount of time, and, you know, everyone's into very different things, but you also just learn a lot about who you're working with because of what they're trying to vibe out to, whether you're prepping or it's service and you're really trying to catch a certain rhythm. You know what I mean? Yeah.
You know, you bring up a good point about music's role in restaurants these days. And for a while it used to be, okay, maybe this is my cultural background. Maybe this is my food background. This is the restaurant I cooked in. This is what's going to influence that I open. But now I feel that the music you listen to really influences what you're going to open. And you can see the music a lot of times in this book, whether it's the jazz or the classical, the Bollywood, the DIY spirit, there's a through line between the music you love and the ethos of your restaurant. And you both have music playing in a huge part of what it is to, you know, walk into your doors. Can you talk about a genre of music or a song that was a direct inspiration to the restaurants that you opened?
Direct, I suppose. I mean, I think a whole sort of styles of music. I kind of like, at the time when I was opening the restaurant, I was listening to a lot of Kate Renata, I think that was kind of that sort of mood, that sort of mellow mood. I kind of creates a really nice aesthetic for the restaurant. And I think it was just, I think it was kind of like build. I kind of, you know, you kind of, it's a bit chilled and easygoing in the beginning of service. And then as it, you know, sort of the peak hours, about 7:30, 8, I want to have like a bit of a party vibe. And then it's kind of like, I want people to get out sort of thing. And so the sort of tone changes as well. I think at the time I was doing the restaurant, like You're the One, like Kishanada and Sid and things, like they were, that's a strong song actually that sticks in my mind. And I think
that's a great example. Yeah, that's definitely a vibe. Catron, the vibe.
Yeah, definitely. I think that'd be a song for me.
Now, I know that obviously we're living through a really tough time with independent restaurants. I know that both of you have been affected and you have pivoted and things like that. But looking back or even looking forward, Friday night, week is over, people are going out to eat. What is the song vibe you want on when people walk into the restaurant that goes, the work week is done, I'm here for a meal, I'm here to just escape a little bit?
Oh, that's a hard question.
That is such a hard question. We even have it to the point where we have different playlists by different either FOH or back of the house staff, just different staff members. And, you know, we all know and we can all be like, oh, play Artie's playlist, because we know at a certain time of the night, you know, the mellow one has been great and it set the vibe, but now service is rocking. There's people waiting to sit down and we're moving and we're feeling good. And, you know, we put on another playlist that's more upbeat. I can't even specific artists and albums. I mean, so hard right now, off top.
Yeah. I think in the back of the kitchen, there's certain moments where we have like, I kind of like to have a female team and things. And we definitely get a 90s female angst going where there'll be a bit of Alanis or Fiona Apple and like listening to Paperbag. And that's like back of house. But I don't think I'd have that playing on the floor of the kitchen. but certainly I'm just like, we're just kind of getting really riled up and it's just quite funny. And we're all just singing along to a lot of the stuff as well. So I think that gets us in the mood a bit during service. So but I think front of house, I think I sit there for ages trying to perfect my playlist, and then I'll be playing and I'm like, who put that song in it? Someone changed the song.
Deliver me to evil, cause I don't wanna feel no more. Deliver me to evil, cause I don't wanna feel, I wanna hurt and not feel. I wanna have an ice cold heart with no emotion on the part. I wanna I wanna hurt and not feel.
Number one of the things you said in the book was that your passion for your craft as a chef and businesswoman comes directly from your teen musical obsession. So I'm curious how your love of Hanson Mbop drives you as a businesswoman and a chef.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think, okay, so me and you have to, create this image of me growing up in Pakistan and somehow this band from middle America, these blonde boys, like, floor to ceiling, whole room was plastered with these posters. And I would somehow get these magazines. I had the Christmas album playing and my parents were like, what? And I was just so dedicated to the cause. And obviously there was some sort of like theme girl hormones. And I was just like, I was just so dedicated. And whenever we'd be like, we'd come to London and stuff a lot. And I'd be like, okay, oh my God, no, they're going to be in town. And my mom would be like, okay, fine, we're going to take you to, you know, HMV, the music shop, and you're going to get your CD signed. And I certainly feel like, my mom says that about me, like, since as a kid, if I believed in something, it was very hard to kind of shake me off the cause. And there were times almost like I'd convince myself of the belief. And then they'd be like, oh, actually, I don't, like, you know, I turned, I think probably about 17, where I was like, oh, I don't like them anymore. And I have better taste in music than like, that's quite old. I'm not going to lie. I think, I mean, that's shamefully like, but I was just so dedicated to the cause, these blonde boys. Sounds really disturbing. But I think that.
You're age appropriate.
I know, not anymore. I mean, sometimes I come up with these facts when people are like, why do you still know this? I'm like, I don't know. But it's just embedded in my mind. But yeah, but certainly with my work as well, like, I came into the industry quite differently. I used to work in documentary film and I was just so dedicated to it. And I feel really proud saying that about myself, where I just like push myself. And I with food, it's so personal for me that I think that sort of dedication comes through. But the point with the comparison with Hanson is terrible.
Chad, similar to that, Fela Kuti and Jay Dilla are cited as inspirations for driving you. Specifically, Fela, how they took, him as a leader, and then as the whole band took their own approach to music and made it their own. And you said that was a massive inspiration for Lhasa. Where do you see the connection to the two of these musicians with their way they approach their own craft and you approaching your own cuisine?
Side note, I'm pretty sure Chase answered or wrote that one, but I can respond partly for him because I'm just avid of as a fan as he is. I think personally, I probably have more of a connection with Dilla. I think even just the importance of the influence he had in music in Los Angeles at the time he was around before he passed was, I would say, similar to the way Chase and I took the idea of what everyone expected a restaurant to be and the traditional way of opening a restaurant and taking that and being like, no, we could cut it up and rearrange it and make our version of it, you know? And, I think just the energy and spirit of kind of the independent, kind of like the freedom in it, you know, like we can do whatever the F we want, you know? And I think that spirit in Dilla's music definitely lives in Lhasa's kind of demeanor and how we go about existing in the restaurant landscape in LA, you know?
Hmm. Yeah, there is a great quote, also from the Lhasa interview that says, as cliched as it sounds, every dish at Lhasa is a song. And I really like that because it does make a parallel between what goes into crafting something for people to enjoy, right? Whether that's the song, a dish, a restaurant, a painting or something like that, it gets to the the next part of the quote is everything has distinct parts, right? And I love that you have all these creative building blocks. But I would love for you to both talk about your creative process and what it means to put a dish together and how something gets on the menu and out of your brain and then out of the kitchen, because we all know that there's some dishes that never make it out of the kitchen as well. Right. But enough for it to be like, this is out of my brain, it's out of the kitchen, it's who I am, it's what I want people to eat and to consume at the restaurant. I'd love to know what you put into that process.
I mean, that quote that you're actually referring to, that stuck out to me when I was reading some of the bits, Chad, that was written about, you know, the different elements coming together in music the same way, like salt, fat, acid, and texture, and all those things playing. And I think that's so true. That really resonated with me. And I think, I mean, for me, it's like, again, having learned how to cook from, you know, my mom, my grandmother, and having kind of built on my own passion, it's like, it's almost like I kind of sometimes feel like I'm coming in backwards with certain things. And it's like, just recently, there's the place that I'm working at the moment, they brought in loads of pineapples to simply just to garnish the pina coladas. And I was like, you're just going to use these as garnishes. And I was like smelling them. And then I was like, okay, I took two back in the kitchen. I snuck them back. And the next thing you know, I'm caramelizing them and making a pickle out of them and drawing. Ooh. I was like, you know, saw the base that I'd be using, a coriander seed, cumin seed base with, you know, aniseed and black cardamom and things. And I was like, I could find a base for like a normal, a Pakistani pickle, and then building on that and taking this ingredient. And I think it's just like, when you read about musicians as well, it's like suddenly something just sparks in your brain and like the melody kind of builds in. And I think that's sort of my way I approach my cooking. But it does come from a place where like, I talk a lot about it in the way that I was like, I don't believe in like essentialism and like there's only one way to cook certain type of food. And I think a lot of South Asian food in a way to almost, I suppose kind of create its sort of like own, how would you describe it? But to create its sort of like own sort of magic, people are like, no, there's only one way to make a biryani. It's only one way to make Halim and things. And I'm like, actually, no, there's people have different tastes, different regionalities. And, you know, the way my grandmother put, the size of her hand is so different from mine. So when she pours spices, the flavors change and her sights change. Mm. And in the same way, like, I feel like my food has evolved that way. My experience of being in, you know, living in London, traveling different places, and picking up different skills, I think that's how it kind of evolves. So I think that sort of parallel certainly rings true to me, I think.
Chad?
I think there's a handful of different ways that dishes end up getting composed, but I mean, you know, it's here in LA, it's walking down the street and going to get a taco and, you know, something as simple as the salsa and the combination of, or whatever meat it is, might inspire me to think about something differently. I think for me, it's finding parallels. Just because we don't really cook super traditional Filipino food, some of it is, but it's really like I'm just sitting back and living until something kind of jumps at me and makes me think of how I could flip something, kind of like making a beat. You know, you're finding a sample and you're digging through records and you find a loop. And you're like, I can make a completely different song out of this, but honor the original. That's kind of how I go about it. It doesn't get too cerebral. Sometimes it does, but it's really just finding parallels too in other cuisines. Like we have a poke dish on right now. Obviously, there's a lot of parallels. There's a lot of Filipinos in Hawaii. And then poke is obviously a mixture of Japanese, Hawaiian, and Hawaiian American, and then the Filipino version is of something like poke is more akin to ceviche, which is, you know, Latino, Latin American, and so our version is kind of a mashup of all those things, but really trying to make it more Filipino out of all of those, and just, you know, tastes and touches of the other cultures that are inspired by that dish in general. So there's just finding these parallels to make sense of it. Without ruining it, you know, really that's That's the end goal, is don't ruin it. Like, make it your own, but don't ruin it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, yeah, I've been given that. I've been given that instruction in the kitchen plenty of times. Just don't ruin it. And I'm just like, what am I going to do? But I mean, I think that's so interesting. It's like being a diaspora sort of chef and being coming from an immigrant experience. It's like, you're not just bringing your heritage. You're also around different people. I mean, I've grown up in, I don't know, like in London, I live in South London in Brixton, and there's a large like West Indian, Afro-Caribbean community. And just being like, you know, and my family's funnily enough, like always lived around this area. And my grandmother still talks about, my mum talks about as well, like going to Brixton Market and picking up ingredients and vegetables I'd never seen before, and cooking a plantain and putting it in a curry, for instance. And we don't have, we've never cooked that in Pakistan, but suddenly it becomes its new thing. And I think that's so magic. Yeah, I think, and there's also that shared sort of sense of like English food is so bland. Yes, it is, isn't it? And this is like, we all kind of come together with that. And so yeah, I think there's that sort of like fusion as well, which is nice.
One of the things we really want young chefs who read this book is to take away about how to use music as an ingredient within their restaurants. So what advice do you have to young chefs who are opening their first spot, their first stall, their first food truck, whatever, on how to build a good playlist or a good audio signature, and things to consider and things to also maybe stay away from?
I think with young, I mean, it's a thing with music. I think we've all gone through that stage where it was incredibly, like, our taste in music was like a sort of a signifier and qualifier of our coolness, of our credibility and all those sort of things.
Yeah.
And if you're not listening to the, and I mean, I like kind of like, I was saying that earlier, I mean, I'm just so unashamedly like, yeah, I used to be into Hanson when I was 10. And it's embarrassing as hell, but I'm like, yeah, that's part of me, and it's I'm not allowed to talk about it in so many circles. I'm still am, should stop. But it's like, I think with young people, it's like not being so trying to prove themselves. I think that's going to happen naturally, but I think that's very much the case with young chefs, where they're like, I need to be the coolest, I'm trying the newest things, I'm going to invent how to make this sauce and do that thing. And it's like, actually no, be true to yourself, try to understand where you're coming from, try to understand the sort of food scene that you're working in, and just be I think don't try so hard, which is
that's the correct answer for sure. Is don't try so hard, and be really honest about it, you know, like, what is your vibe as a person? The vibe you have as a person is going to bring in the type of staff you have, and then, you know, a lot of that's going to resonate. And, you know, like, more than likely, there's going to be some similarities in what you and your squad are listening to, or like trying to listen to together, pre-service, during service, post-service. And I feel like if it's really honest and transparent, then that vibe in general, because it's just real, is really going to be able to capture a vibe for a guest. You know what I mean? Like, if the staff is enjoying what's playing while they're rocking service, then I think people are going to enjoy the food a little bit more. You know, naturally.
Yeah, I love that. And it brings us to our final question, which is, how do you both use food and music to connect both to your colleagues, yourself, and your guests?
I mean, that could be deep too, man.
Yeah.
Go deep. We don't have a little bit of time to go deep.
I think for us, you know, naturally, just of our social group and our community for Lhasa is pretty involved with kind of the, you know, hip hop electronic independent community in Los Angeles. So there's a lot of heads that are coming through on the regular, like Mind Design, Toki Monsta, Teebs, Daedalus, Alfred. You know, there's a handful of people that are coming through just because we know them. I've known them in the past from music, but they are into food and enjoy the vibe at Lhasa. So, I mean, I think naturally we kind of draw that vibe in to, you know, like-minded people. And in general, I think, like the last question, if what we're playing throughout service is really embodying who we are and allowing people to, and it's not too serious, you know, it's still just, it's a good time. It's all vibe. Yeah. And it's just allowing people to enjoy themselves. I mean, I can tell you that there was not one night of service ever in the history of Lhasa while we were open that someone wouldn't come up and ask Chase, Steph, or one of the servers what playlist or what were we listening to. Like every night, no matter what, without a fail. You know what I mean? And or like if not, the playlist, like what track is this, you know?
I mean, the same. It's funny, like on my like sort of mission of what I wanted for Empress Market and my pop-ups was very much like the music becomes part of the experience. And certainly like I've had that with people like, what song is this? Or, oh my God, I heard this, you know, this song so many years ago, or you'll be playing. Through my team, I'll be learning so many like sort of Afrobeats, and we'll all be just dancing to Joanna or like Jerusalem and things. And I'm just like, it's just suddenly becomes that thing. And everyone's like, but this is a Pakistani restaurant. And I'm like, yeah, I know, but we're in South London and there's so many different things which are influencing and shaping me. And it's just shaping all those sort of sounds are kind of coming together. And I think that's something that, you know, I think it kind of like the experience becomes representative of not just who I am, but the people that I'm surrounding myself with and this taste and sounds and everything that is coming together. But yeah, like I think, I mean, it's that sort of element of authenticity, I think is true. Like it has to be a part of it. Yeah, and it's you've just suddenly, you know, everyone can identify with the experience. It doesn't need to be alien or it doesn't need to be some foreign exotic experience they're having. It's like, no, this is, I can identify with this person and we come from the same place.
Well, Chad, Namra, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you to World City as well for having
thank
us
you.
Part of the Snackity
thank
Booker.
You.
Thanks for participating in the book and giving us your time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the pleasure is mine.
It's an absolute pleasure.
Check out the restaurants or where they can go. Why don't you plug your socials?
Sure.
I'll be hosting events. Obviously, everything's a bit, I'm still regrouping and pivoting at the moment, but you can follow me on Instagram at Empress Market. And Facebook,
and then,
I think, as well.
Right on. Lhasa's website is, we're currently just following the rules, you know. We're doing mostly takeout and we do have a patio now, outdoor dining, which is extremely helpful during these times. And yeah, you can just catch us on Instagram, Lhasa, LASA_LA, and then the website is lhasa-la.com.
Great. And you can find us at Snacky Tunes. This is part of our official Snacky Tunes book tour. So for more dates and events, you can go to snackytunes.com. I am one half your host, Greg Bresnitz.
And I'm your other half, Darren Bresnitz. Thank you to Faden as well, the World City, everyone for tuning in. We appreciate it. Support your independent restaurants.
Independent bookstores.
And your independent bookstores. Please.
And independent artist musicians.
Yeah, just all things independent.
All things independent. Fill in artist. Support where you can, even if it's just an Instagram post or something. Just spread the word, spread the love. And thank you. Thank you for everyone who took time to be a part of this. And hopefully we'll see you soon.
Knew you well. Oh, heaven, God. chest when you said never let you try again. What you said, and you said, oh, let me go, let me lie here, I can't believe it's the end here. Oh, let me stay, let us die here, stay far away where I call home.
All of us at HRN have been keeping busy despite working and recording from home. This fall, we're proud to announce new shows on the network that each bring important and enlightening stories to listeners around the world. While the world is in turmoil and the future of our country is uncertain, there are certain constants that help keep us going. For us, food and storytelling are essential. While we can't come together in person, food podcasts from HRN can provide a virtual table we can all gather around, bringing exceptional stories to your ears and keeping you informed on the ever-changing political and environmental issues of our time is integral to our mission. At a time when the world around us is rapidly changing, HRN is committed to being here for our listening community, and we need you to be here for us. Join our table and help ensure the future of food radio by becoming a member of HRN. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate to make a contribution. Check out the latest additions to our lineup while you're there. You can see all of our series at heritageradionetwork.org/new shows.
Welcome back. Kid Wave live in studio.
Hello.
Thanks for coming by on your way down to Austin.
Oh, thank you.
First time down to South By?
Yes.
Are you excited?
I'm very excited, yeah.
We're going to get to that in a moment, but we're going to start from the beginning. 2011,
yeah.
You leave Sweden, go to the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
Why did you leave Sweden? What was the music scene there? And what did you see or hope to find in the UK?
Yeah, so I moved mainly because, like, I guess I was, you know, I was 19 and I wanted to get out from from quite a small town, so I figured London would be the place to go, and so I took my suitcase and went. Yeah, I thought that the scene in London was a little bit more vibrant. Where I was from in Sweden, there was literally no music scene. So that was actually the reason why I went in the first place, just to have a scene.
Where were you getting your influences from?
At the time?
At the time, when you were still home.
Mainly from my friends' bands, actually. A lot of people think, when they hear the first record, they think that it's from a lot of 90s bands and whatnot. But the reason why it sounds like that is because I was very influenced by my friends' bands, who are all quite influenced by those bands. But at the time, I had no idea what those bands were. Back then, I was mainly just going to see my friends play. I listened to their records. Weirdly enough, it was just within a quite small circuit of friends.
What did you find when you got to London? Did you find the inspiration looking for besides your friends' bands, or was it not exactly what you had hoped for?
It was what I had hoped for. It was a lot more difficult than I'd thought. So,
in what way?
It was just a challenge to move to London when you're that young and had no money whatsoever. So I found that it was, causing a lot of anxiety and stress. So I guess the lyrical content is a lot about, like, the whole anxiety, whereas the music was kind of already there when I moved. I knew what kind of music I wanted to make. So it was not a case of me going to London and, exploring the music scene and taking it all in and transforming my music into something similar. I think the songs and the music were, that I already had a vision when I went. But, the lyrical content definitely inspired it.
Were the lyrics there before you moved, or were they adapted when you got there? It's interesting.
Yeah, no, they were all, when I write, I normally just come up with musical idea, like an instrumental, and then I come up with a vocal melody, and then the lyrics go on top of that. But I think the lyrics were all kind of like in the time being came from there.
And what led you to your first EP, or when did you feel that you were ready to release Gloom?
So Gloom came out once I had... So I wrote a couple of songs and I put out a single called All I Want on a Bandcamp page online. And that generated a lot of interest that I wasn't expecting at all. So I was like, oh, I keep writing, keep putting things
that
out.
That
works. That works, yeah. So I did that and I wrote a couple of songs and Gloom was one of them. And there was a label in London called Heavenly Recordings that I had just heard of them, and they had these amazing band on their roster, and they were basically the first label that I sent my songs to, and I was very lucky.
Just that easy.
Yeah, it sounds like a dream.
You just send it to the first one, they say, sure.
It sounds like a dream, and it was a very old school way of, things to happen. But it happened, and they picked up on it, and I didn't have a manager or anything at the time. Looking back, a manager would always have gone, let's explore our options. If one label is interested, there might be other labels. But Heavenly turned out to be a great label, and they were very supportive, and ended up putting out my first EP and my first record.
Can we hear a song?
Yeah.
What are you going to play for us first?
We're going to play a song of that first record called Honey.
Live on Snacky Tunes.
In my life, heaven can wait, but not tonight. Even the window of things that I lack, wherever I go with you now. Some say dreaming is a waste of time. I've got nothing else in my life. Honey, different, yeah, every was right. And the lights you took with you, they left me tonight. Surfing down colors and rivers of blood, and the sun making shapes in my head. Some say dreaming is a waste of time. I can't get you out of my mind. Down on a 45, and in only seconds time, driving down on a 45, and in only seconds
So you mentioned your LP came out 2015, mm-hmm. Wanderlust. How had living in London influenced that, as opposed to the songs that kind of came pre-written from Sweden?
I think the songs developed with my songwriting. So considering the first couple of songs I wrote when I was 19, I'd just moved to London. I had more time to write the album. Everything happened kind of quickly, but I moved to London, put out two songs online, I got the record deal, and a lot of the songs that I had put out as demos online, they wanted on the record as well. So it was a case of going in and re-recording it, and I guess the newest, like the songs that were added last to the record were, I think, better than...
Is it in the sequencing, like as you get later in the record?
I think so. I mean, I think that my writing gets better and better, and like, I think any songwriter would say the same thing, because it's all like, you know, you add life experiences to it and your writing gets better. It's like any craft, you do it, and the more you do it, the better you get at it. As you know, as you can say whatever you want, but I think that's the case.
And as you grew and you put your band together, you found a band member from Sweden, from mm-hmm. Australia, from Britain. Did you like try to make it as multinational as possible? Is that just how it happened?
No, that was just how it happened. I went to I studied sound engineering for 6 months in London. And at that school, I met Sarah, the drummer, who was from Australia. And the guitarist at the time, he's also Swedish, and he was an old friend of mine in back from Sweden, and he's a great guitarist, and I had him play on the demos and a lot of the recordings because he's just amazing. And then I really wanted him to be in the band as well, and he kind of came over and did a few shows with us, and then things got really serious. We got a record deal and, you know, got a booking agent and started going around. And he just had to, you know, make that call whether to move to London or not. And he did. So now I've left London and Matthias is still in London.
So, yeah, let's talk about that. You decided to move to L.A. So what mm-hmm. did you hope to find in L.A. that you no longer found in London?
I guess it was just the same thing. The same reason why I moved to London. The same reason why I moved to L.A. I think the music scene out there is better at the moment. It's a bit cheaper to live still. London got crazy expensive.
Kinda. It's getting there.
It's getting there. That's the thing, though. I went out last year to LA in the spring, and it was way cheaper back then than it is now. But, the scene is really good out there at the moment, I think. There's a lot of bands. You get, as a musician and artist, you have more space. You can easily get rehearsal space or studio time. Whereas in London, everything's very cramped. It's harder. It's more difficult.
I feel like in LA, everyone has a studio in their mm-hmm. house.
Exactly. People seem more chill about it as well, you know?
And you've been finding some local writers to work on songs with. Who have you been working with?
I haven't worked with writers, mainly like musicians, mm-hmm. like Jackson, who's here in the studio with me.
Hello,
right,
Jackson.
Now.
Hey,
guys.
He's a local LA musician, plays in a really good band as well called Snowball 2, worth checking out. just did like a bit of promo there. Basically, I went out to LA. I met a lot of musicians via my friends out there who are all awesome musicians. And I just found some people to play with and go on tour with.
And did you see your lyrics adapting, like when you went out to London, mm-hmm. To the surrounding of LA? And if so, how?
I think they're more personal, they're more direct now compared to the first record. I think that's more of a natural development of my writing, though. I'm not sure the move to LA necessarily inspired it. I think it's more of having more confidence and being able to put yourself out there a little bit more, which also comes with age, I guess. I mean, I'm not 90. I mean, I'm 24, so it's not like I'm getting old or anything, but it's been 5 years, so of course that makes a huge difference in terms of what's happened to you in your life and stuff. But yeah, not sure LA... Apart from, of course, if you move to a place like LA, you're going to come across some, you know, pretty messed up things. So there's been a lot to write about just because I put myself in those situations where I move from one big city to another.
Any example you care to share?
I don't know. I feel like it's just in general when, like, London and Europe is quite different to LA. So I found a big clash in kind of... I wouldn't say morals is the wrong thing, but I find that the way people live and are out there is very different. And it's not necessarily right or wrong. It's just different. And I don't know, it's just been in, like, there's been so many, like, weird parties. I went to, like, a wake, like, somebody's wake, and that was, like, a big party, like a house party. Stuff like that is just, like, fucked up. So, I don't know, it's just been a lot to take in, I think, in terms of it's being very different from where I'm from.
Can we hear another song?
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to play for us?
We're going to play another song of the first record called Wanderlust. Like your head is upside down. You like my goldfish in a bowl, but still your life goes on and on. I'm always running. Yeah, always running. Always running around. I was never like them keys, because my mind was never still. It's like an ocean running wild, yet always drifting from side to side. I'm always running. Thank you.
You're currently on tour
mm-hmm.
with the Shins.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
That came about as my somebody, I think it might have been in like my manager or somebody in that team, actually sent James Mercer my new demos. And yeah, he kind of just like the label. I know, it sounds crazy. And yeah, he really liked it apparently and offered me to come on tour with him.
And here you are. So where, and you have a couple shows at a show at Baby's All Right too this week.
Yeah, I'm playing my first ever headline show at Baby's All Right tomorrow.
Which is the best venue.
I'm super excited. I've never been.
Billy and the team have been on the show before. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's become the, well, after all the venues in Brooklyn shut down, it's become the de facto.
Yeah.
And not by default. It was already great, and now it's just the only one left.
I think coming from, like, outside of New York, Baby's All Right is the venue everyone's heard about, like, in terms of smaller venues and smaller bands and stuff. So.
And it's just great. And when you get on stage with the lights behind, it's awesome.
Awesome.
And then where are the shows with the Shins?
The show on Tuesday is going to be at the Bowery, and the one on Wednesday is at Music Hall of Williamsburg.
And then you are on your way to South by Southwest.
And then literally coming off stage at Music Hall and going straight to the airport pretty much. No, we're flying out really early in the morning.
So as someone's first South by in 2017, what are your thoughts on it and what are you hoping to get out of it?
I mean, I keep hearing... The thing is, everyone keeps telling me it's amazing, and then everyone keeps telling me it's not as good as it used to be, and then everyone's gonna tell you that it's not as good as it used to be, but it's still very good. Yeah. So I'm just super excited, and I know for a fact that it's gonna be very hectic because we're doing multiple showcases on like each day, so I'm gonna go out there and probably just be running around like crazy, but then we have a day off as well on a Saturday where we're just gonna
Well, a fun fact is that Lin Yi and I first met at South By when I was still in college.
Yeah.
When she was working at Fader, and she turned me away from the party. She didn't do like a full body turn. She did the you're not on the list and then kind of the like quarter inch turn where you're not on the inside. And then 6 months later, I was her intern at Fader because I was like, well, that's not going to fly with me. So
that's what you got to do, right?
Just yeah, like, that's what it's got to do. We want to make sure we have time for one more song. Mm-hmm. Thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, outside the tour, anything coming up? Other LP?
Yeah.
Future writing plans?
There is an EP coming out.
Okay.
Through Bridge Over to the second album. So there is, I mean, this might be the first announcement of it. But yeah, there's an EP coming out. And the song that we're going to play now is the first single of the EP. It's called Everything Changes. And then there's more singles coming. And then, yeah, the EP drops, I think, sometime in the summer or early summer.
Same label?
No.
New label.
New label.
Who's the new label?
Actually, Secret.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not the name of the label, just actually a secret. So where can people find you, catch you on tour, get all the information?
They can find me on all social channels as Kidway Music. So Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, you name it, I'm everywhere. And they can, yeah, we're touring now with the Shins and doing South By, and then I'm doing two shows in LA. I got a headline show in LA coming up as well at the Echo on the 15th of April, and then probably keep touring.
Just keep going.
Yeah, keep going.
And writing music.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Lin Yi, thank you. Make sure to go to bit.ly/MOLD to contribute to the Kickstarter. Appreciate everyone coming by today, and we will be back next week with another episode of Snacky Tunes. Take us out. We'll be right back.
them we're waiting. Tell them we'll be there. Or say I'm no angel, but God knows I'm ready to bury those demons. Shake out the evil. Every night my dreams say, every night I feel it. Everything changes. Everything changes. Electric and something gets better. Or say I'm no angel, but God knows I'm ready to bury those demons. Shake out the evil. Every night my dreams say, every night I feel it.
Is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat & 3 is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah. And my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.